I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds podcast. And John, I don't have anything else.
I think that's good. That works. That is Patrick. He's a author and a podcaster. You can check him out on Twitter at ATFMB. My name is John Anilio. I'm a composer and a podcaster and a teacher. You can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. Today we are psyched to be joined by Tom Merritt. I try to get new guests on the show, but then I was like, Tom hasn't been on in a long time. Like, I feel like we've had Tom on a couple times, but
yeah,
and we love Tom. And it's been like 4 years since he's been on the show last. I believe he was on with Natanya Barron like many, many moons ago, like 4 years ago. So Tom, if you don't know, Tom is a author and a podcaster. I listen to many of Tom's podcasts. A couple of my favorites are Current Geek and Chord Killers and Daily Tech News Show. So he's got a lot of good stuff out there.
I still listen to Sword and Laser, so.
Yeah, and Sword and Laser obviously is for people who like what we do. I'm sure you also listen to Sword and Laser. And he's got a new book project out, which we're going to talk about today. And Tom, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is fun. Yeah, I think that when I was on Functional Nerds last time, I lived in not only a different house, but a different part of the state. Yeah. So it's been a while.
Weren't you in California at that point?
Yeah, I'm still arguably in California. I'm in Los Angeles.
Yeah. I grew up in Fresno.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so LA I don't like because LA steals all of Fresno's water.
Right. Yeah, that's the only reason it's dry up there. We just take all the water. No, my friend Roger Chang, who produces for Daily Tech News Show, is from Modesto. So,
Modesto.
LA
yep.
Background.
Well, and I ran into Beth Cato, who was from Hanford.
Oh, right.
And we're sitting there going, she's like, I'm from Hanford. I'm from Fresno. Oh, my God. You know Me and Ed's Pizza? Yeah. I love Me and Ed's Pizza.
That's awesome.
So, Tom, how many – I'm curious now because I listen to a couple different shows that you do. How many currently – and I know some of them are weekly. Some of them are daily. Some of them are – oh, I listen to your Star Wars show, which I enjoy very much. But that's like sort of like once a month or so right now. So how many currently running shows do you have right now?
Yeah, I only do 4 a week.
Okay.
So there's the daily show, Daily Tech News Show, and then there's 3 weeklies, Current Geek, Sword and Laser, and Chord Killers. But then let's talk about Star Wars, like you said, it's a monthly. I do one called FSL Tonight, which is seasonal. It's a made-up sports league filled with people from science fiction and fantasy shows and books, and that runs for a few months every year. I have a couple others that are sort of pod-fading. That I used to do, and we haven't given up entirely doing other seasons someday, but there's nothing on the books yet. So that's mostly covers it right there. I also do a non-podcast. I do a series of videos for Tech Republic called 5 Apps, which I should not forget, even though it's not a podcast.
Cool. Yeah, FSL is a real fun show. I believe I was on in the first season. So when I was on the show, I was like the beat reporter for the Game of Thrones team from Westeros, and it's just, it was really fun. So Tom, tell us about some recent season of FSL.
Yeah, the season that you were covering, the Winterfell Direwolves had a lot of injuries. they really had a hard year that year. And every year we elevate teams into the league and relegate the teams that don't do well. So last year, a brand new team, the Los Angeles Guardians of the Galaxy, did very well. Then we had a takeover where the Coruscant Empire were acquired and became the Coruscant Senators. So they are now, have a whole new look, a whole new team after some battles. And it sucks because I can't remember who's actually in the league sometimes and who was in the past. But we relegated finally the Dune team, the Arrakis Sandworms, after years. They just finally fell apart.
I hear people dig them.
Oh, that's good, Patrick. That's excellent.
Oh, the Cheyenne Mountain Gators, if you're a fan of Colonel O'Neill and his team, they move the ball around pretty well. They're in there.
Yeah. You know what? Have you ever heard of a guy named Kevin Eikenberry?
That sounds familiar. Why have I heard that name?
He's part of WordFire Press, and he's got a couple of science fiction novels out. He's ex-Air Force. He lives in Colorado Springs. Refuses to acknowledge that the Stargate exists.
You know, but that's dedication.
Yeah, that's
to your orders. He's going by the book. You might like the Gallifrey Time Lords too. They've done well in the past couple of seasons.
Cool. But go and check out, like, Tom's got a lot of good stuff. The Star Wars show is good. You know, it's really funny with the Star Wars show, because I've been reading all of the Star Wars books.
The new ones.
And the new canon books. And, I was going to, like, literally like a week or two before Tom's Star Wars show ad started running, I was like, I should pitch Tom a Star Wars show. Because we could do something about the Star Wars books. And then I'm like, oh, he's got it already. All right, forget it.
Matt, you're welcome to join us sometime. I'll talk to Jenny and Garrett. We'll get you on. Because that whole thing started with Jenny and I text messaging each other over the December break saying, we should do a Star Wars show. And then Garrett emailed me like, we should do a Star Wars show. And I'm like, well, then all three of us should do a Star Wars show. And I think everybody was so excited by The Force Awakens that was a pretty common reaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, John was.
So, I would love to join it. Yeah, I'm up on the books and everything, so I'm still super into it. So
I just started Bloodline. Okay. I finished Dark. Now I can't remember the name. The one that takes place in the last season of
Clone Wars.
Clone Wars, yeah.
Yeah. Dark Disciple, yeah.
The Christy Golden one.
That's the Asajj Ventress Voss story.
So then let me ask you guys, are you watching the new animated show?
Yeah.
Do you think the kid's going dark?
Oh yeah. Okay. And I'm really curious how they're gonna keep their 7+ rating and make him go where he has to go. Like, I don't see any other, either they kill him, which is even worse, or he goes dark. Like, that's the only way it makes sense.
So have they painted themselves into the Ahsoka corner again?
Sort of ish. Well, I don't know.
You know what? This is the character who is going to go dark and kill all of the Jedi. So let's give him a plucky sidekick.
Well, I think so. And you know, in terms of the 7 rating, you know, my son was watching Clone Wars with me for a while on Netflix, and at some point when we got to about season 4, my wife was like, I don't know if there's a lot of talking about killing and I'm going to kill you, and I don't really want that. And then when Rebels came out, I'm like, oh, it's for 7, it's good. So we haven't watched it yet. Well, I've watched it, but my son hasn't watched it. But now I'm just like, this is getting pretty serious too. You know, they're not going to, I don't think they can keep that 7, because it's like you said, I forget, I did read a really good article about that it's like, they're either going dark side or they're going to die, because this is right before A New Hope and they're nowhere to be found in New Hope or anything like that. So
there are supposedly no other Jedi by A New Hope.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
except for Yoda.
Right. That's good.
And
that's good.
Obi-Wan.
For a while.
Spoiler alert by the
spoiler
end.
Spoiler alert. Well, you know, I think we should. I actually want to talk a little bit more about that before we move on. Though I do want to mention our Patreon. If you dig what we do, check out our Patreon, which is patreon.com/functionalnerds. We have almost 50 people backing us right now, and we really appreciate that, and it really means the world to us. And we totally stole the idea of having a Patreon from Tom.
I was just going to say that Tom Merritt is the reason that we have a Patreon, because I finally got John to agree to it. I'm like, look, Tom's doing it. If Tom's doing it, we can do it. It's okay. And he finally agreed.
I stole the idea from Brian Brushwood, who is the one who told me, like, hey, we should do a Patreon. And I had been kicking the idea around since they had launched, and he was the one who finally pushed me on the edge. So we can trace our lineage all back to Brian. And by the way, people, if you're not supporting the Functional Nerds on Patreon, you need to, because I am. So you should too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Their boss.
Yes, so now he can tell us what to do. That's right. The great thing about it. No, it's we dragged our feet on it for so long. I created the account. I dragged my feet on it for a really long time. I had it for over a year before we actually launched it. So, So, but
oh, yeah,
I'm glad
I
we finally
created a Patreon account in like July, right after they launched, but I never did anything with it until finally we put it behind Cord Killers first, and then
I just kept sending John examples, and finally, like, I'm sending him yours. I'm like, look what Tom's doing. Look, Tom's doing it. We can do this.
That's what all the Patreon people were like. Where are all these podcasters coming from?
So if you dig that, go check it out. Let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And, you know, I'm going to go first only because we already sort of talked about it. Is my pick is the newest Star Wars book, Bloodline, which is written by Claudia Gray, who also wrote Lost Stars, which out of the nearly 70 books that I wrote, the 70 books I wrote last year, the 70 books that I read,
wrote all the Star Wars books.
Yes. I read a lot of books last year, and Lost Stars was my favorite. I just, and that's considered a young adult novel, and I don't care. I thought it was amazing. So I was very excited that Claudia was tapped to write this next one, which is takes place, I believe it's supposed to be 6 or 7 years before The Force Awakens, and it is Leia's story. And I think she did another amazing job, and it does fill in some of the backstory of The Force Awakens and helps bridge that gap between Return of the Jedi. It's great. I mean, she has a real handle on those characters, and I think she's doing an amazing job. And I've really liked all the Star Wars books just about, but I think she might be the strongest writer working for Star Wars these days. So that is my pick this week. And Tom, you said you just started that one, correct?
Yeah, I loved Lost Stars too. I think she pulled off a feat because, and maybe it was easier this way, but to me it was a feat to take two characters that you'd never met before, string them across the timeline of the entire first three movies, and make you love them, even though one of them's still part of the Empire, and both of them are in the Empire at points. It was just fantastic, and I came away absolutely adoring both those characters and caring about them and wanting to know where their place was going forward. So I'm hoping to see more of those characters. But yeah, Bloodline, she gets to sink her teeth into Leia. I just started it, but already I'm seeing like this is amazing. Like, she has brought this character to life and is filling in those gaps. That was a kind of a jump when you went from Leia in Return of the Jedi to Leia in Force Awakens. You could see the connection, but you wonder how she got there. And I can tell that we're starting to get that story.
Yeah, it's great. And one of the things I had mentioned on the last episode, that Star Wars has the Star Wars show now, which is the official like YouTube show that's about 10 minutes long, and I've caught the most recent one that I saw. They actually had a artist rendition of one of the main characters from Lost Stars. I probably pronounced her name. I think it's Sienna Ray, or I'm not sure how
that's
you're
how I say it. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say Sienna Ray, and it's a great, illustration of her, like a comic illustration, and she's in like the TIE fighter pilot outfit, and it's really cool. It's like your first sort of look at this new character that's part of canon, and I think it's for a game that she's going to be a character that you could play within. I don't know if it's a tabletop game or a video game, but it does point to maybe this character will show up in more things, you know, whether the movies, but maybe further books or something. So it's exciting, you know. That's what I do love about all this is now it's like anything that comes out, it's like, it's canon. Thank you.
Well, it's kind of, it used to be too, John.
Yeah, no, I know.
Well, I have to say, I'm not one of the people who's upset about the uncanonization as much, because I was getting behind. I was getting lost. I mean, I was very excited when Timothy Zahn's books came out, but over the years, I just couldn't keep up. So it's kind of nice to have a fresh start.
And same for John. John felt the exact same way, and I completely understand that. I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way, because it was just like, it was so many. And then it was even getting to that point with where the books were kind of starting to conflict with each other. And I know some authors were like, no, you can't do that because this, and this. So I do like that it's like, fresh slate. And then, yeah, for someone who likes the books, it's like, yeah, now you could start over with it, because now it's a manageable number to go out and get. And eventually that will probably become unmanageable again, but they're spacing them out a little bit. You know, it's easy to follow. And like, I'm in a good position when it comes to the point where, you know, I get some of them sent to me. So I don't get them all sent, but I do get some of them sent. I did get Bloodline sent to me, so that was exciting. Nice. All right. So, Tom, what's your pick then this week?
You were nice enough before the show to tell me that I could do two, so I'll keep them kind of short. But the first one is Uncharted 4, which is the video game that just came out. I am not a big first-person shooter fan. This is not my kind of game, but I happen to know a person who worked on the game. My friend Rob worked on the sound on the game, and it's got amazing reviews. So he gave me the tip. He's like, I know you don't really play these kind of games, but he's like, use the explore mode, because we did that for people like you who really aren't into the twitch and trigger part of it, but want to get the story. And it's like watching a TV show. It's great. You get the whole Nathan Drake story. It's really compelling. It's well paced. I still get to play some stuff, but I don't feel stressed out. Like, I'm no good at this, and I just want to get back to what happens next. Yeah. So not that I don't have a few moments where I fall to my death off the edge of a cliff somewhere, but you know, it's all about archaeology and hunting pirates and treasure, and it's really fun.
That's great. So I think you had Rob on Chord Killers very recently too. So that's really cool. So he did the, now does he do the sound design? Like what's his particular job within it?
I'm a horrible friend because I can't tell you exactly.
Okay.
I just know he works at the sound and he's really good at it.
Cool. Well, you know, within sound, there's so many like little, I mean, and anytime you have a big movie or a video game, it's so many people that work on that stuff, and there's so many things that go into it. So,
and what platform were you playing on?
PS4.
Okay.
PlayStation 4. And the other one I would recommend, we just started catching up. We don't have cable, so we buy this and just watch them later. But we kind of like to binge this one, as good as it is. Orphan Black.
Oh, I love that show.
Just keeps getting better and better. One of the episodes we watched last night felt like it was 3 hours long in a good way, even though it was only 40 minutes, because there was just so much happening. It was amazing. And of course, Tatiana Maslany, if you don't already know,
incredible.
Is impressive.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So good.
What season are you on?
She's so good because...
Tom, what season are you on?
We're on the current season.
Okay.
So we pre-purchased the season, and we get them the day after. But like I said, we sometimes fall behind, and then we'll just binge on them because they're so fun to watch back to back.
That's one of my my summer shows. Like after, because I watch a lot of stuff on Hulu because I don't have cable either, and so I sort of just kind of keep up with all the superhero shows on Hulu throughout the year, and then Orphan Black will show up in the summer or in the late spring. So I'm always a season behind on Orphan Black, but that's always on Amazon. The other one I'm looking forward to, which I know you watch, Tom, is Mr. Robot, which I haven't seen yet, but that is coming. Yeah, that's coming to Amazon Prime in June, I believe. Season one is coming to June. So that'll be another one where I'll be a season behind on that, but that'll be one of my summer shows, which is fine by me. It kind of works out. And then if I like it enough, then I'll just end up buying the currency, which I do all the time anyway, for certain shows. Just like, nah, I want to get it now, so I'll just buy it. That's fine.
Mr. Robot's one worth having, too, I think, because I want to go back and rewatch those before the season starts, which is about to happen.
Yeah. So very cool. Cool. I think I'm in two seasons of Orphan Black. So I think season three is up on Amazon Prime now, and then I'll probably end up buying season four because that's the way that works. Patrick, what is your pick?
I'm going in a completely different direction because I've been working on some stuff here lately. I know a lot of our listeners are authors and they host their own websites through whoever, but they tend to run WordPress. And they just have, you know, hosting somewhere. They don't do WordPress.com. At least I don't recommend you do WordPress.com. I also don't recommend you do Blogspot. And a lot of people are still hanging out there. And for those of you still using LiveJournal.
George R. R. Martin still uses LiveJournal,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, if you're running WordPress on hosting somewhere and it's not WordPress.com, if you're just running your own installation of WordPress, I highly recommend Yoast. And this is the SEO plugin, and it handles everything for you, all of your SEO needs, and it does it, and it presents it in a really easy to follow manner. So if you're not an SEO, like I have to be an SEO for work, and it's kind of interesting that SEO has become a title for people, like I have to be an SEO. And it's just about optimizing your posts, your pages, your categories, your content for search engines so that you can be found. And it's amazing to me how much traffic I'm now getting to my site, atfmb.com, for all of my Scrivener posts based on using Yoast to optimize those posts. So even though those are 2-3 years old, I'm getting tons of new traffic on there just based on optimizing them using this plugin. So there are a lot of SEO plugins out there. This, they do have a free and they have premium. I'm just using the free version, but it's Y-O-A-S-T, and I'm just pronouncing it Yoast. Moz recommends it. A lot of other places recommend it. It's a great plugin. So that's my tip this week. If you're trying to help people find you and find your website over time, use a plugin like that.
Cool.
I might actually take advantage of this.
Yes. I did have a question for Tom as far as cord killers and all the stuff that you do. It seems like we're going towards a model of all of the content producers having their own online streams. Like CBS is going to have the at CBS, and I'm pretty sure NBC has their own and is going to go private, and Starz is doing theirs, and HBO. Pretty soon, in order to get the content that you want, you're going to have 25 different accounts. At that point, is it still cost effective?
We talk about this a lot on Cord Killers, and it seems like what we're headed for is new aggregators, which may sound like, oh, well, so we're just going right back to cable, aren't we? But the difference is every aggregator that launches in the US can offer it everywhere in the US immediately, rather than getting franchise agreements and laying cable and all of that, which used to happen. So no more local monopolies. And there was a really interesting article on TechCrunch describing a situation where you could get CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, maybe Univision, Unimas as well, into a package of around 36 channels. So not just their broadcast channels, but also their cable channels that are popular, like MSNBC, Fox News, et cetera. And then add HBO, Showtime, Hulu, and Netflix, or maybe not even Hulu if you've got all those broadcasters, just Netflix, Amazon Prime, et cetera, and still be under $99 compared to, which is much cheaper compared to an equivalent package that you would get from a traditional cable provider. So we're already seeing PlayStation View and Sling TV as the beginnings of that kind of offering. There's a lot of rumblings that Hulu might provide their own similar kind of offering. It looks like Verizon wants to do something like that as well. And we may see other players like maybe Apple, maybe Google jumping into the game at some point as well. So I think what we're going to have is you'll be able to subscribe to, say, CBS All Access on its own if that's what you want and that's all you care about. But there will also be these nationwide multi-channel services that will say, hey, we'll package a bunch of these together at one cheaper price so you don't have to be paying a bunch of different ones. I think the advantage is not so much cheap apples to apples, but control. So if you're running a little short on money and you're like, ah, really all I need is one or two of these, you can then cut your bill down very easily and subscribe to just one or two and then go back to the aggregator. Because that's the other big thing about these things is Sling TV, PlayStation View, you don't have to sign a contract. You just sign up when you want and then cancel when you don't.
Cool. Yeah, because right now I'm not connected to a cable. I'm connected to a satellite dish.
Well, and DirecTV has their own package coming out. AT&T announced this a couple months ago where you can just switch over to not needing the dish anymore and get an internet version of their service. I'm interested what the restrictions on that will be compared to what you would normally get over satellite, but they're sort of making a transition into becoming one of those new companies.
But so let's say, for example, that you go with something like that. And I'm sorry, John, for hijacking this, but let's say that you did that and you went with DirecTV and they had a streaming service and you didn't need the dish, but your internet is Xfinity or Comcast, and Comcast says, well, fuck you, I'm not going to give you your bandwidth to get everything because you're not using our service. You know, we're NBC Universal, you should be using our service.
Sure. Then Comcast is in violation of both the FCC and DOJ restrictions that allowed them to merge NBC Universal and Comcast.
They still do it. I mean, they throttle.
The FCC and neutrality regulations that are being fought out in court right now. But honestly, I think the biggest impediment to them doing that is public outcry. I really don't see Comcast blocking a service like DirecTV because there would just be so much furor over it.
And I'm not talking about blocking, I'm talking about throttling.
Yeah, they're not going to throttle either. The worst that they can get away with, and the FCC is even trying to crack down on this, is interconnection agreements. So what they can say is like, hey, we're not throttling. We're not blocking anybody. We're just not adding any hubs to that interconnection where DirecTV's video comes over. And the way DirecTV gets out around that is to strike a deal with Akamai. Netflix had a problem because Netflix was serving their own video, and so it was much easier to identify what ports it was coming in on. What DirecTV can do is say, we're going to go through Akamai. You want to block Akamai? You're going to be blocking or throttling the entire internet because everybody runs through Akamai. And there's others besides Akamai. They're just the most, you know, popular example of that. But the way the internet works should help those kind of situations not happen very often.
That would be awesome.
At least that's my hope.
Yeah, well, you know, it's changed a lot even in the past couple since I cut the cable. It's been, you know, things have developed quite a bit in that time. So it's still an early days thing, and you're seeing more and more good and bad, and it kind of will probably shake out into something. But I think we still have a few years of sort of transitioning, I believe, until it all gets worked out. But
and the speeds aren't there for everybody. That's the other
thing. Yeah.
You know, in some areas, you're just not going to be able to get a fast enough connection to take advantage of it yet.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, definitely. Well, to switch gears, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to get Tom on the show is, you know, in listening to some of his shows, he had mentioned a current project of his. And Tom, if you could tell us about it. So it's first, tell us a little bit about the book, and then second, tell us a little bit about Inkshares and how this is getting out into the world.
Yeah. So the book is called Pilot X. And it is about a time traveler named Pilot X who just wants to travel about in his time ship Verity. And he gets sucked into all of these diplomatic wranglings, which turned out to be part of a hidden dimensional war. And it turns out that he may be the only one who can stop the war and save the universe from being destroyed. And he also might have to kill all of his own people to do it. So really, just a guy who wants to just work, but keeps getting pulled into bigger and bigger things. I wrote it as my NaNoWriMo, my National Novel Writing Month novel, a couple of years back, right after the Doctor Who 50th anniversary special, which I loved. I thought was great. But ever since the Chris Eccleston season, I had been really attracted to the idea of why a good person like the Doctor would be forced to commit genocide against the Gallifreyans. Now, Stephen Moffat found a clever way around that problem. But I was like, well, what if he didn't? What if he didn't find the clever way around that? And so that's why that's what I came up with Pilot X. I tried to make it not just a ripoff of the Doctor Who universe. There is a race that considers themselves the Guardians of the Timeline. They obviously have some time traveling type races that they have to fight against. But there are no multiple lives or regenerations, et cetera. So it's just my take on, okay, well, in a universe where there's time travel and there's a dimensional war going on, how does this person deal with it? And I also tried to really keep consistent to the idea that you can't go back and change time, at least it would be very difficult to do so. And yet, that doesn't lead to predestination or universal knowledge, because just like space is so big, I mean, we can go anywhere on Earth. That doesn't mean we know what every point on Earth looks like. Even with the internet, you can't go everywhere in space-time and know everything that happens. So you can hide things in time.
So I have a question. First off, Tom, that sounds amazing. But I do have a question for John. John, do you understand the importance of why the time ship might be named Verity?
No.
Yeah. Unfortunately, John, we're going to have to break up now, and the functional merge is over because you have no good reference. Tom,
I watched the Eccleston episode. I watched the Eccleston season, and I watched the first Tenet season, and I didn't dislike it. I didn't keep up with it.
Tom, who was Verity?
Well, the Verity, which sometimes she's the Verity if you're talking about the ship. Sometimes she's Verity because she actually talks to Pilot X, unlike other time-traveling ships. But yeah, Verity is definitely named after Verity Lambert, who developed Doctor Who back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay, cool. Well, thank you, Tom, for inviting me. I appreciate it. But why don't you tell us about Inkshares, because that's how you're getting this book out into the world. And I found this really interesting, and I think a really great way for authors to get their word out, So tell us a little bit about Inkshares, what they do, because I'm not really familiar with any other company doing something quite like this.
Yeah, it's an interesting take on publishing. The short version being that they allow the potential readers to choose what gets published instead of having editors doing slush reads. What I have been doing, I would write a book in National Novel Writing Month. I'd take a couple of years to polish it up, hand it over to a friend of mine who's an editor, and then I'd self-publish it on a place like Lulu and Kindle, etc. And when Inkshares came along, Veronica Belmont, my co-host on Sword and Laser, turned me on to it. We decided to do a contest with them where we could have a Sword and Laser imprint in the Inkshares universe. And I was fascinated with this idea that you just need 750 people to pre-order a book, just 750 people to pre-order a book, and then they will publish it. And I used to think, okay, well, that's an interesting crowd-sharing thing. But then once we actually went through the process with a couple of writers like J.F. Dubow on Inkshares, I realized they're not kidding around. They're doing full-on cover treatments, marketing plans, development edits, like all the same things that every author goes through with, you know, Simon & Schuster and Tor and every other publisher. So the only difference is you've funded the launch of the book with pre-orders from your audience, which saves Inkshares a little bit of money, you know, on not having to hire, you know, go through these slush reads. But it also builds in an audience that is going to promote the book and be interested in the book. And it gets people interested in buying the book even once you pass the goal of 750. So it's a take on Kickstarter or Patreon crowd sharing, but for publishing.
Now, will these books be in... or will they be print? Will they be in like your Barnes and Noble and that kind of thing as well?
Yeah, they do both. They do ebook and print. Mm-hmm. They recently installed something called the Quill Goal, where you, if you only get 250 pre-orders but not 750, they'll do a light edit for you, and then they'll publish it the way Kindle would or Lulu would, where it's up to you to market it, but it's out there and people can get print and ebooks. If you hit the 750 goal though, I mean, they go and they talk to bookstores, they try to get it stocked, Barnes and Noble, etc. They work with Bowker to make sure that it's, you know, listed properly in books and print. They go to Publishers Weekly. J.F. Dubow's book, Life Engineered, and I think G. Derek Adams' Asteroid Made of Dragons both got written up in Publishers Weekly. So, yeah, I mean, it's up to the bookstores, obviously, to decide whether to stock it or not, but they have a good shot.
Yeah, because that I think makes a big difference, obviously. You know, if it shows, I mean, some people, that's still how they get books. They don't read ebooks, they don't, you know. And I think it lends an air of legitimacy, whether it's a better book or not. But that's just, I know that's the way I look at it, too. It's like, if it's on the shelf, it's like, ooh, this is a real book. Like, I know that's like so kind of condescending to even think about that way, but that's, I think that's the way a lot of people think about it. I think, you know, when you're in a bookstore, this is the real deal here.
Now, there's still something to that. My childhood friend from Greenville, Illinois, helped beta read Pilot X, and he is super stoked that it met the goal because he's like, I can't wait to walk into a bookstore and see it on the shelf. So it's exactly that thing you're talking about of whether it for good or ill, whether it's legitimate or not, there is that air of reality and legitimacy when you see like some big chain or third party bookstore that's very selective putting a book on its shelves.
Well, and plus it's fun to go into a bookstore and go to the science fiction and fantasy section, you know, that one shelf, and go through there alphabetically and see where your book would be.
Oh, right. It'll be right after Martin.
Yeah.
Oh. I hadn't actually thought about that.
Yeah. Think about that. Come on.
Especially if it's only a shelf.
Product placement is important. Yes.
Yeah, right?
Huh. You know, one of the questions I had about it, too, is that with your – do you have any input in regards to, say, the cover or the artwork or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just started that process, and they give me an author questionnaire and a marketing plan to fill out, and both of them have questions about, you know, what do you want on the cover? How do you see the book? What mood should this book give? Would you rather have artwork or photography? And they will then go and take care of all that, but they want, you know, what direction you want there and what kind of marketing. Like, is this for kids? Is it not for kids? And they do all kinds, not just science fiction and fantasy. So they need to know what genre and subgenre it's in, et cetera. So, yeah, I had to give a lot of input to get the ball rolling. I'm pretty excited.
Here's a streaming exclusive. You can only see this if you're on the feed right now. But Tom, there's my book cover. There's a sketch.
Oh, that's so good.
There's a sketch of it.
I don't want to describe it, but I love it.
I know, right? Isn't it fun? It's so much fun to actually get into that and be able to do that with your publisher.
Well, yeah, it seems like a good option too, because a lot of authors are what I guess would be considered hybrid authors these days, where they have traditionally published things through some of the major ones, and then they have other projects that they self-publish. So it seems like Inkshares is kind of a good way of putting a lot, because there's so much work that goes into putting a book out there, that especially if it's an author that has a following that can get 750 pre-orders, it seems like a good alternative to maybe doing it all yourself, where Inkshares will do a lot of that work, but you still have a lot of the artistic control over some of the elements of the book as well.
Yeah, for sure. I saw it. I was a little bit lazy, to be honest, because I've taken my writing as a hobby up until now. And so I didn't mind just self-publishing and telling some folks about it, but I started to get enough good feedback that I thought, well, this is a good next step. Rather than going to all the trouble of finding an agent, finding a publisher, sending out copies, getting rejection letters that you need to do with publishers, and there's nothing wrong with that, I was just lazy and said, well, I already have a Twitter following, so the Inkshares thing is perfect. Like, I have podcasts, I can plug into that. It might not work that way for everybody, but it is a way to build up an audience too. Even if you just hit the quill goal, you've now got 250 people who are invested in the things you write. And maybe that next book after that will turn into one that's 750.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like a great platform. So why don't you tell people where they can go and find it? Because I know you hit your 750, but now you're at the level of wanting to sell some books after that. So so let people know where they can find that.
Well, and that's the other way it works, right? You don't get royalties on those first 750 because Inkshares is using that to pay for the editors and the marketing and all of that. So you want to sell more after that. And if the book sounds interesting to you and you'd like to get a pre-order of it, go to tommerrittbooks.com and you can find a link to it. Or you can just go to inkshares.com and search Pilot X. And I'll continue to do author updates and sample chapters. There's 3 or 4 sample chapters up there right now if you want to take a dive in before you commit.
Awesome. Good. And once again, Tom has all of his various podcasts. I recommend checking out Current Geek. And if you liked our cord cutting talk earlier, then you should definitely check out Cord Killers if you're not already plugged into that one. And so, Tom, are you going to be doing any upcoming cons? Because, like, you know, now that you're going to be in, and I know you go to lots of tech cons and genre cons and things like that, but are you planning on sort of doing more cons or more like sort of book focused cons now that you're going to have your book out there?
Yeah, I do. I plan on that. I don't have anything on the books for that particularly yet. But I imagine I'll want to. I'm definitely going to I'm definitely changing up the strategy this year, trying to go to a few different cons rather than the same ones all the time. So the next one I'm going to is CreateCon in Orlando at Create Convention. You go to amove.tv. You can find it there as well. And it's a con of a bunch of podcasters that I know, including Garrett Weinzierl from Let's Talk About Star Wars, who's putting on the con. So that's the next one I'm scheduled for. That's at the end of July. I'm also headed out to Salt Lake City for the Warcraft premiere in a couple of weeks. Scott Johnson, who I co-host Current Geek with, is renting out a theater for a bunch of Warcraft aficionados to go hang out there. But yeah, hopefully more book-style conventions. There is the science book convention that's happening in November in San Francisco. Keep an eye on Sword and Laser for more details about that. We're going to be doing a version of the show from there as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Very good. For us, one more time, if you dig what we do, check out our Patreon over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, anything you want to let people know about before we have to wrap it up here?
Yes. Although he's not here physically, our bagel overlord is always here in spirit. So on behalf of John DiNardo, I would like to thank Tom and Veronica for their kind words on Sword and Laser and all their support of SF Signal.
Love SF Signal. I'm so mixed emotions about that. But John DiNardo, we salute you.
Well, I can't think of a better way to end than that. All right, everybody, have a great week. We'll talk to you soon. Sunshine.
Expo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?